Tonight's conference is going to be on relationships and education. For our supporting scripture for relationships, we're going to go to Philippians 2 and 3 that says, "Do nothing from rivalry or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourself." And that's what we are talking about in the relationship part. You always have multiple ongoing relationships. You have your relationship with God. You have your relationship with yourself. You have your relationship with your business. You have your personal relationships with people and resources that are in your life. You have your relationships with technology. And of course, you have your relationship with money. So let's talk about our relationship with God first. These are our beliefs, our values, our ethics, and there are different ways that we can have a relationship with God. We can have a selfish and self-serving relationship with God. And this is when we only call on His name when we're in trouble or we need something. We can have a relationship of convenience with God, which is you use God's name when you feel it'll be impressive to people that you're around. You can have a relationship of habit. You rarely pray or follow His principles, but you go to church pretty regularly. I'm in church every Sunday, but you don't do anything biblical or God principle-based outside of that. So it just becomes a relationship of habit. Then there's a relationship of necessity, where we understand that without God guiding our path, we're just going to walk into a ditch. We're just going to have problems day and night. So it becomes a necessity for us to have a relationship with God. And then there's no relationship. You don't have a relationship in any shape, way, form, or fashion with God. And there are plenty of financially successful people that don't have a relationship with God. But what I would challenge you on is to look around, because usually those people have many of the people that are around them that have a strong relationship with God, and they have strong convictions. And they influence those non-believers, and they influence those people who don't have a relationship with God. So a lot of times their actions and their ethics and their values and their principles are all biblically based or God-based, not because of them, but because of the people they have around them. So we all have our different relationships with God. So one of your homework assignments is take a moment and really reflect on your relationship with God. Is it selfish and self-serving? Is it a relationship of convenience? Is it a relationship of habit? Is it a relationship of necessity? Or do you even have a relationship? So after we look at our relationship with God, we need to look at our relationship with ourself. And it's the same thing, guys. We have those same categories that we have with God. Our relationship with ourself can be selfish and self-serving. We're all about ourselves. We won't do anything for anyone unless it benefits us. We won't go out of our way for anyone else unless we feel like we're going to get something out of it. So we have a very selfish and self-serving relationship, even with ourselves. And then sometimes we have a relationship of convenience. And more people have a relationship of convenience with themselves than they realize. This is when we don't have a high value of ourselves. So we put our value in being convenient and accessible to everyone around us. You see, some things that we know in life, if you'll settle for less, people will give you less. If you'll settle for more, people will give you more. And people will always take advantage of things that are convenient in life because gaining access doesn't require much work. So if you're the kind of person that with yourself, and a lot of people say, oh, I'm just a giving person. Okay, I understand the difference between giving and just being convenient for everyone. Even when it puts you out, even when it doesn't benefit you, even when there's nothing that you can do that's going to make you better for someone else. You work yourself in the ground. You get sick. You're laid up in the hospital and no one comes to visit you, but yet you are there for everyone else. We have to be smart about this. Because just remember, people take advantage of things that are convenient because gaining access doesn't require much work. So if getting to you is simple and easy and doesn't require much work, those are the folks that are going to come back to you time and time again. We're on relationships with ourselves. We also have a relationship of habit with ourselves. So we've always been the way that we are. And even though we don't like it, it's a habit now. I've always been mean. I've always been selfish. I've always been self-centered. I've always just stayed to myself. This is how I am. I don't like it, but this is how I am. So we actually have a relationship of habit with ourselves, a relationship of necessity. This is when we feel like we're the only person that we can turn to, the only person we can depend on, the only person we can trust. And so we only let people in when it's an absolute necessity. We fight it at every turn, at every walk. We fight letting people in because I only want to have a relationship with you if it's an absolute necessity. Guys, do you know how many blessings we are blocking from ourselves because we're not making ourselves more accessible? Now, earlier I talked about making yourself too accessible, and you can go to extremes either way. You can make yourself too accessible, and you can make yourself just non-accessible. How do you know? You have to pray about it and let God guide your path on that one. And then there's some people who don't have a relationship with themselves. I mean, with themselves, they don't. They don't feel any value. They don't feel any sense of self-worth. And so they depend on other people to give them their value. They depend on other people to give them their self-worth. That's why you have girls that end up in strip clubs and end up, you know, as hookers and strippers and guys who end up doing all these things that they're not supposed to do because we don't have a relationship with ourselves. We don't value ourselves. We don't give ourselves any sense of self-worth. So therefore, we just depend on everybody else. And you're like, well, Billy, what does this have to do with business? Because we run into these relationships all the time. We hire people that fall into these categories of selfish and self-serving. People that have a relationship of convenience. And most of the time, we're just so happy. Oh, they're always available. They're always around. I can call her 24/7. She'll always show up. She'll always work that extra shift. She'll always do these other things. Not realizing as a Christian, we're supposed to be aware of that. Wait a minute. She shouldn't be this accessible. He shouldn't be this willing to compromise his family, to compromise all the different things that people need from him and should give to him simply so that he can be convenient for everyone else. Because you end up taking advantage of people. And then there's a relationship of habit. We hire people that this is the way I've done it, this is the way I've always done it, and this is how I'm going to do it. Even though it's not good for us, not good for our business, that's what they say. Then there's that relationship of necessity. People that they won't share with the other employees. They won't give information. They won't train. They hold on to their little knowledge or their little information like it's Fort Knox. And we can't get the agency or can't get the business or can't get our shoe shop or our pizzeria. We can't get anything to grow as a team because one person has this relationship of necessity and they won't open up or share with anyone else. Then there's some people who have no relationship. We hire these people that have low self-esteem. They have no real sense of worth, no real sense of value. And then we spend all of our time trying to put value in them, trying to build them up. Not saying we shouldn't, but we spend so much time building them up that we end up ignoring our business. Or we end up ignoring the other people in our business. It's kind of like when you have multiple children and you have one child that's really, really good, never gets in trouble, never has an issue. We tend to ignore them because we're so busy taking care of the child that we're constantly in the principal's office, constantly in trouble, constantly having to be on our knees about. So we have to be careful with that and make sure that in all these relationships that we have, that we are showing a balance within the relationships, both in our personal relationship and in our work relationship. Because remember last week when we talked about how frustration leads to anger? And then you have to ask yourself, are you angry at yourself right now? Are you angry in business? Are your employees angry at themselves? And how do we know? Because anger shows up in one of two ways, either laziness or undisciplined. Lazy is when we're not doing something that we should do, or we're not doing enough of something that we should do. And then there's undisciplined, where we're doing something other than what we should do. And that's how anger manifests itself. So look around your team. If you have employees, if you have staff, look around and see who's frustrated, who's being lazy and undisciplined, who is saying, you know what, I'm not even going to worry about it anymore because my boss is not going to do what I need her to do or need him to do, and so forget it. I'm just going to do what I want to do. you know, which is undisciplined, or I'm just not going to do anything. I'll show up and get my check, but I'm not going to go. I'm not going to put any effort into this. And then your job is to go in and find out, where did this frustration come from? What am I doing as a leader that allows this environment of frustration to even build up within my business? So you got to know what's going on with your people, but you also have to have a relationship with your business itself. And let's use our scriptural support of Hebrews 12 and 11. It says, "For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it." So what this is saying is that, yeah, discipline doesn't feel good. Discipline isn't a good thing emotionally right now, but when I've been trained in discipline, I know I'm going to yield that peaceful fruit of righteousness. And in business, that peaceful fruit of righteousness is I'm going to grow my business. I'm going to be able to pay my people more. I'm going to be able to run a successful business. I'm going to be able to get those principles that I talked about. What are the reasons that God gives us for business in the first place? You know, for our passions and for our product and for philanthropy and for our profits. Okay, and our personification of him. So absolutely, we want to make sure that we've got discipline. But it takes three types of discipline to run a business. Business leaders, I'm talking to you. It takes three types of discipline to run a business. It takes self-discipline, accountability, and outsourcing. And unless you practice all three types of discipline, you will have no leadership power within your business. You're like, leadership power? What do I mean by leadership power? Well, see, power is composed, or power has two parts to it. It has control and it has influence. Okay, if you're taking notes, write this down. Power, we're talking leadership power, has two parts. It has control and it has influence. Control is when we exercise direct authority over our subordinates. That's control. I can make you sit here. I can force you to do that. And then there's influence, and the influence is the actions of others based on your desires, your teachings, and your request. So basically, control is when I'm around you. Influence is what happens when I'm not around you. So let's go back and kind of review this. It takes three types of discipline to run a business: self-discipline, accountability, and outsourcing. And unless you practice all three types of discipline, you're not going to have leadership power in your business. There's some things that your people shouldn't do. You should outsource that to someone else. Maybe I shouldn't be on my knees scrubbing toilets. You know, even though I know I can, hey, I'm your highest paid salesperson. You have me on my knees scrubbing toilets. How frustrating would that be? Well, because we didn't manage our money properly, now we feel like, oh, no, I can't afford to pay anyone else to do this, so I'm going to make you do it instead of outsourcing it. Or accountability. I'm too lazy or too undisciplined to actually hold you accountable, so I'm just going to trust that you do it. I'm going to rely on your self-discipline to get it done, and I'm never going to check you. Well, the moment you do that, the moment you give up control, the moment you give up accountability, the moment you have people doing things that should be outsourced, and the moment you don't practice self-discipline, that's when you give up your leadership power in a business. And again, leadership power is control and influence. Control is what is when I'm around you, and it's the direct authority that I have over my subordinates. Influence is the actions that others take based on my desires, my teachings, and my requests. And influence power is much stronger than control power. Because influence lasts much longer than just immediate control. And how do you know if you have no power? Okay? How can you tell, okay, Billy, I know what you're saying, but how can I tell if I've truly lost leadership power? Well, first of all, let's look at control. There's no accountability standards in the business. So if you don't have written guidelines, written rules, a job aid book, employee handbook, all those wonderful things that people can refer back to, if you don't have those things, then you don't have the tools of control. Okay? If your team willingly ignores your wants and your desires and your direct orders, you have no control. And if you allow them to willingly do this and not even have any kind of repercussion, you have no control, which means you've lost your power. Now, what about influence? Well, Billy, how will I know if I've got any type of influence? Well, it's pretty simple. If they understand your desires, if they understand what you've taught them, if they understand what you request that they do, and before they do anything, they take that into consideration. Well, I was going to do this, but I know you want it done this way. I would have done that, but I thought about you, and I said, no, he probably would want this, or she would want it done this way. Okay, you've got influence. But when they just do what they want to do, and you say, didn't you think about that I would want it this way? Yeah, I didn't really think about it. Then you've lost your power. And so as a business leader, when you have no leadership power, guys, you got to go back to the basics. You've got to go back to self-discipline on your part, holding your team accountable. You have to have written accountability guidelines. And things that need to be done that they won't do or you won't force them to do, you've got to outsource it. Because if you don't, your business is going to fail. Okay? It's going to fail. So let's talk about the personal relationships with people and resources in your life. That's another relationship that you're going to have in business. These are your friends, your family, your network, prospects, customers, vendors, your board members, your mentors, all those people that are around you, the people and resources that are in your life. You got to have a relationship with those folks as well. So how do we know if we've got these good relationships? So let's kind of break this down a little bit. The more successful relationships that you've developed, the more opportunities become available to you. So if you've got a lot of good opportunities, it seems like you're always getting referrals, or someone's always introducing you to someone, or someone's always trying to help you, or someone's always trying to bend over backwards to make sure that you've got this. You've got some pretty successful relationships going on. And the more of those you have, the more opportunities are going to come your way. And the more opportunities come your way and you're prepared for them, then you're going to have a much more successful business. And you say, well, where do these opportunities come from? Well, most of it's based on your image, okay? Your image. Your image is what attracts people to you. But it's your character that keeps people near you. Let me say that again. So you can be beautiful. You can look super talented. You can look smart. You can just be fabulously gorgeous. You can have, you know, the $1,000 suits. So your image is what attracts people to you. But your character is what keeps people around you. So I may meet you today and I might like you until I get to know you. And then once I get to know you, I realize, uh-oh, this person has no character. But if you're sound in character and you're following Bible-based principles, those people are going to want to hang around you. You're like a magnet. Sometimes they need to hang around you just to keep them in line. You know, I have a new mentee in my world right now, and they're so locked into Christ and so locked into God that I was talking the other day. I said, hey, I need to keep you around me just so I can make sure if I'm slipping that there's some strength around me to be able to deal with that. So sometimes you want that. You want those people that are so grounded and their character is so strong that they actually keep you from slipping. Okay? Another thing about the relationships around you is your net worth is a direct reflection of your network. Let me say that again. Your net worth is a direct reflection of your network. So if you hang around four broke people, you will be the fifth. And if you hang around four wealthy people with good character, they will help you to understand how to become wealthy with good character. Now, one of the things I do want to talk about when we're talking about relationships and business, especially in the people around us, social networking. Social networking has created an entirely new networking avenue that's available to you. And if you're not taking advantage of that, if you're not on LinkedIn, you're not on Facebook, you're not on Twitter, you know, then you're missing out on a powerful piece. You can connect with those online character Bible-based people and let that work offline. In fact, two of the speakers that were on last week, I met, only one. One I met in person, and then we connected online and went from there. But one of those people I met online, and we developed an offline relationship, an offline connection. So you need to take advantage of social networking, especially LinkedIn. If nothing else, you need to take advantage of LinkedIn. And what I mean by take advantage is meet as many people that fall within that guideline of what you're looking for within your niche, within the groups that you want, within the maybe you're looking for more education out of it. Fall into that, and you'll find that those relationships will transfer offline. So do not miss out on that, please. Okay? People and activities in your work life will fall into three primary relationship categories. One is for money. It's three for money and three for energy. For money, you're going to have money makers, money savers, and money takers. That's pretty self-explanatory. Money makers are people that help you create your income stream or help keep your income stream going. Money savers are people that provide goods and services at a lower than standard cost, or people that take over work that you should do, or they can free you up to do more things that bring in more total income. But they are money savers for you. And then there are money takers. And money takers are always around. You never have to hunt for a money taker. They are always there. But they're also energy makers. When we're talking about these relationships, they're energy makers, energy savers, and energy takers. Energy makers are those people that just fire you up. Every time you talk to them, every time you're around them, every time you get close to them, they just fire you up. They excite you. You know, this man, I love talking to this person because I know when I walk away, it's going to be a valuable conversation. And we need those energy makers in our life. We do. And then there are energy savers. We need people around us that will allow us to do the big income-producing labor instead of the smaller jobs. They'll take over those smaller jobs. And sometimes that can be someone that we hire. Sometimes that can be something that we outsource. I know a lot of times I will use Fiverr, F-I-V-R-R, for those of you that are thinking about that. I'll use Fiverr, or I'll use Employee 123. And these are companies that I can labor out certain things, or I can send certain labor out to them and let them do those tasks that either I don't want to do but are important, it's important that they get done, or tasks that I feel like this is going to take way too much time and I'm not going to get the return on investment, so I'll let someone else make these calls, or let someone else do this research, or let someone else go online and find this while I tend to the big jobs. Now, we got to be careful with those energy savers, because here's what happens, and I talked about this last week. We put so many energy savers around us that we don't actually go out and do the big job, the big money-making job. We just take our jobs and split it up. So now I'm paying two or three people to do a job I used to do by myself, but I'm calling them energy savers when in actuality they're money takers, because this is a job that's not being done right. It's not being done in the way that I would have done it, and it's not generating as much income, and all I did was took one job and split it up among two or three people, so now I'm spending three or four times the amount of money that I would have. So we have to be really careful about our energy savers and make sure that they truly are allowing us to go out and use our energy in much bigger, broader ways, not just, I'm going to go home and watch television, I'm going to go home and watch Oprah and eat some bonbons while you guys sit here at the office. Okay, so be really careful of that as well. And then energy takers. And here's what's so crazy. You can have a money maker that is an energy taker. I've got several like that in my life. They give me opportunities. They keep me in front of folks. But every time I'm around them, it's just a drain energy-wise. Or I have to work so hard and expend so much energy dealing with their personalities or dealing with their moods or dealing with their egos that, man, I'm drained at the end of the conversation. I might make some money, but I'm drained. Now, when it comes to people like that, you've got to put a buffer between you and that person. Maybe they deal with your office manager and not you. Maybe they deal with your marketing person and not you. Because I'm going to tell you, when you're dealing with a bunch of energy takers all day, it's not long before you end up getting frustrated. And we know what happens when you get frustrated. Frustration over time leads to anger. And when you get angry, you become lazy or undisciplined. So now those very things that you know you should do, I know I should call this person back. I know I need to go and have a meeting with them. But you're so frustrated with the situation that you go, you know what, forget it. I'll put the meeting off till next week. Well, that's your money. You're putting your money off till next week. or, you know what, I'm not even going to call them back. So I'll just let that deal go by. I'll just find me another deal. And then you don't find another deal. And I've had that happen where I got so irritated with an energy taker that I basically let a large sum of money walk out the door figuring I'd make it up. And I never did make it up. Never even got that deal. So we have to be really careful about that. And when you have an energy taker, you have to put a buffer in business, especially between you and that energy taker. And sometimes that energy taker is our employee. So the very employee that's making us money is also an energy taker. We just hate dealing with them. And I can always tell that situation when I walk into a business that I'm mentoring, because it's like, oh, that's Judy. Leave her alone. Leave her alone. She's just going to be in a bad mood. Or he's just going to act this way. Or he's just going to act that way. And I'm like, okay, you're so frustrated that you're angry with them. Now you're too lazy or undisciplined to even hold them accountable. So who's running the show here? You're writing the check, but who's running the show? And so we have to be really careful of that situation, guys. Your money makers and your energy makers should have the highest priority in your day. Your money savers and energy savers should have the second highest priority in your day. And then you want to surround yourself with as many money makers and energy makers as possible, and you want to keep as many energy takers and money takers away from you as possible in business. Okay? Doesn't mean you can't help them. Just means they don't need to be right up under you for you to help them. Now, let's change a little bit. Let's go into a little different conversation. We're going to talk about uncomfortable people. Uncomfortable people. Never get completely comfortable around people that are uncomfortable around you, especially if it's the opposite sex. You see, when people are uncomfortable around you, every word you say and all of your actions are going to be heavily scrutinized, and they're going to use their ego, their arrogance, their emotions, and their expectations to determine what you mean. My dad used to have this saying, and it didn't make sense to me till I got older and start dating. And what he said was, you can never make an insecure person happy. Because whatever you do, they're going to twist the situation to match their insecurity. So if you come home and you give a dozen roses, hey, I was out and I just got you a dozen roses, and that person has an insecurity, or they're uncomfortable with themselves, or they're uncomfortable with your prior actions, then it's, oh, why did you get the roses? What did you do? What did you do? What? I just got you some roses. I'm just trying to be nice. Mm-mm. You're not trying to be nice. You did something. Okay? Same thing with money. You can say, hey, here's $1 million. Why? Are you trying to get rid of me? What, do you have $10 million and you're just trying to give me $1 million to get rid of me? An insecure person will always twist the situation to match their insecurity. So never get completely comfortable around people that are uncomfortable around you, especially the opposite sex. Okay? Especially that. Remember this when we talk about relationships and business. The people that can help you the most, I'm switching up gears again, the people that can help you the most have the least amount of time to do it. So you need to be prepared for conversations and interactions and mentoring time and teaching time. You have to be prepared because usually those folks don't have much time to give you anyway. So if I'm mentoring you and I'm saying, okay, we're going to meet at this time, and we're going to talk about this, and then we get wherever we're going to meet, and I'm ready to talk, and you go, oh, I forgot my notebook. Oh, I didn't bring that. Oh, but I asked you to do that. I know, but I forgot. I was in such a rush. You know, this happened, that happened. It's only a matter of time before your mentor is going to get frustrated, and once they get frustrated, they're going to start pushing you away. So, and you're going to miss out on deals, too. Timeliness is a very important part of a relationship. Timeliness. Because the people that can help you the most have the least amount of time to do it. So when you're late, you show up late, you come, or you don't show up at all, and you call at the last minute with some excuse, that's only going to last so long, guys. It's only going to happen one or two times, and then the people that can help you the most are going to push you away. That's why it's so important that you know the difference between a good relationship and a successful relationship. A good relationship and a successful relationship. A good relationship is when there's good communication and mutual respect. A successful relationship is a relationship with an agreed upon purpose that both parties are acting to fulfill. So I can have a good relationship with you because we like you and, you know, we get along good and all that, and you may not do anything for me. I know a lot of folks that say, yeah, I've got referral partners, because I'm always asking, how many referral partners do you have? Oh, I got a lot of referral partners. Really? This person's a referral partner? Mm-hmm. When's the last time they sent you a referral? It's been a little while, but you know what? I like them so much. Well, I'm glad you guys have a good relationship, but you don't have a successful relationship. I'd much rather have successful relationships when it comes to business, because that's kind of like that energy maker, money maker deal. If I'm in business, I can always put a buffer between my energy takers, but I need my money makers. So it's the same thing here, a good relationship versus successful relationship. Everyone knows couples that can't stand each other, been married forever how many years, got kids in the house, maybe the kids are in high school, and they can't stand each other, but they both work to make the relationship work because the kids need mom and dad in the house, and they both work. This person pays half the bills. This person pays half the bills. This person drives the kids to the game. This person makes sure the food's on the table. This person does that. Now, they don't like each other, so they don't have a good relationship, but they have a successful relationship. And you as business owners, you need to assess the people that are around you and determine who is in a good relationship category that I need in a successful relationship category, and who's in a successful relationship category that I need to maintain that category, or I need to move them to a good relationship. See, sometimes we will waste so much energy with our good relationships that we don't have enough successful relationships around us. Okay? And that's why we have to always control our emotions. Going back to last week, that's why we have to control our emotions, because sometimes our emotions will tell us we need to be here, when in actuality, in order for our business to be successful, we need to be here. Okay? We need to be over to the left as opposed to the right. So what do I mean? Let me go a little bit deeper in this good versus successful, because this is so important. You can get along great with one of your networking partners, but they never send you a referral. So what does that mean? It means it's a good relationship. A good relationship has to have some kind of value. Value means one of five things in business: safety, security, opportunity, health, and by health I mean mental, physical, and financial health, and then overall happiness. So our good relationships are our energy makers. That's what those tend to be. Those tend to be our energy makers. They make us feel safe and secure, and they make us feel, you know, like man, I really like being around this person. The opportunity to be around them is great, and I just feel mentally, physically, and recharged, you know, when I'm around them. I feel happy. Doesn't mean you're going to be financially happy, but that's a good relationship. Where our successful relationships may not feel great, but they're working for what we need. They're working for what we need. So let's look at our customers when we talk about good relationship versus successful relationship. You see, when it comes to our customers, our long-term customers, or the customers that we feel like we're taking care of, they're going to fall into one of two categories. They're going to fall into apathy or laziness. Apathy or laziness. What is apathy? Apathy means that we feel like we have all of the information and all of the resources, and our person is taking care of us, and so we just have no desire to change whatsoever. No, I'm good. Nope, they take care of me. I have no issues. We want our customers to be apathetic. Let me say that again. We want our customers to be apathetic. So when someone comes to them and says, hey, I can get you a better price on this, or I can do this for you, or I can do that for you, you want them saying, no, I'm good. No, my person is great. Okay? That's a successful relationship. Now, a lazy person, meaning I just don't feel like doing any work to make the change, that's what we got to be careful of. Because a lazy person means if someone else will do the work for me, I'll consider changing my situation. See, an apathetic person, even if you did the work, they're not going anywhere, because that's a successful relationship. But a good relationship, we've all had plenty of people that have left us. We go, why would they leave? They seem so happy. Well, they were lazy for the moment. And if someone else did the work, then they don't have a problem shifting. So how do you know if your customers are apathetic or lazy? You ask. You ask, is there anything else that I can do for you? Is there any information that you feel like you need? Is there any other activities or actions that you feel like I should do for you? This is also for my insurance folks. This is why we constantly mention a policy weakness whenever we're doing an endorsement or a change or something like that, because I never want them to find out from someone else that they had a weakness. I never want someone else to be able to say, your agent never had that discussion with you. Your person never told you this. You didn't know anything at all about this. No, I didn't. I thought everything was good. Because once a lazy person wakes up and decides to do something, they go to the extreme. It's kind of like when you get off the couch. You know, we've been sitting there. We didn't want to get off the couch. We finally got off the couch and started doing something. Now, all of a sudden, we're cleaning the whole house. It's like, wait a minute, a second ago, you didn't even want to get off the couch. Yeah, I know, but I'm up now. So we have to be really careful of that in business. We want our customers to be apathetic. And the only way we can make them apathetic is to have a successful relationship. And the only way we can have a successful relationship with them is to constantly ask them and constantly make sure we're telling them where the weakness or where the problem or where the solution is to a problem they may not even know they have already. So when you came to me and you had $2,000 in medical coverage on your car, hey, you got a problem. You have a $6,500 health insurance deductible and a $2,000 medical payment on your auto. What does that mean? That means if you're in an auto accident, you're only going to get $2,000 and the other $4,500 is going to come out of pocket. Where for a few dollars more, I could bump your medical payments up to $10,000. Now if you got into a car accident, not only do you have enough to cover your deductible, you've got another $3,500 out there that we could use for something else medically related. Maybe you want an MRI instead of an X-ray. Okay, well, we've got the money to pay for that. Or maybe you need your teeth changed a certain way or fixed a certain way, and your health insurance is saying, no, that's dental, not medical, and you don't have dental. Well, guess what? We've got other money out here. So for a few dollars more, I can make sure that this problem that you have right now is taken care of. That's how you make people apathetic in your business, by solving problems they didn't even know they already had. Okay, but when you're not talking to your customers, when you're not doing that, your customer's just becoming lazy. And all it takes is the right person to come along, and that lazy person will now be up doing something. They're going to get up and do something, and you're going to end up losing a customer. So we always want to make sure in that relationship we understand the difference between apathy and laziness. And the real issue that you can tell is, are you doing your job? If you are doing your job so well that the person's like, no, I'm good, man. You've got me taken care of. All right, perfect. You sure there's nothing else? No, I'm good. Okay. Now you're making them apathetic, and that's what you want. So we're done with our part on relationships. Now let's talk about education. Education. And so for our scriptural support tonight, we're going to use Proverbs 18 and 15. Proverbs 18 and 15 that says, an intelligent heart acquires knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeks knowledge. See, all of you are on this call tonight because you have an intelligent heart and you want to acquire knowledge. And you have that ear. You have the ear of the wise. So it seeks out knowledge. Where can I go to learn? How do I improve myself? How do I make myself better? Who can give me information? Who can give me the same information that I've heard before but give it to me in a different way? It's in our minds, let's talk about education, in our minds, we have these things within our brains called synapses, okay? And what a synapse is, it's basically like a storehouse of information. And anytime there is an emotion involved, that storehouse actually gets thicker. So the synapses in our brain actually get thicker. And it also creates more of those smaller pathways. So think of it like a road. Let's put it like a road. Let's say you built this superhighway. Okay? Well, that would be an emotional moment where we really acquired something and we're good. but we also built a lot of little side roads. So maybe it's not as emotional. Maybe it wasn't something that really stuck with us, but because I heard it several different ways, I heard this man say it that way, this woman say it that way. You know, I heard the same thing seven different ways. Every time I heard it, another little road was built. And those roads fed into the big superhighway. That's why people who have Alzheimer's can remember their child getting married 20 years prior. They can remember their first kiss, but they can't remember where they left their keys. They can't remember where they parked. They can't remember how to button their shirt, because emotion is a part of education. And what the reason I'm telling you that is when people walk away from us, if we truly educated them, there's an emotion attached to that. They're going to remember what we said because we did or said something that caused an emotion. So if you're just dry with your delivery, okay, this is a life insurance policy, and so now the life insurance policy is, I'm not going to remember your pitch. I'm not going to remember what you said. I'm not going to remember the benefit that you told me, because there was no emotion. You didn't do anything to truly educate me in an emotional manner. But if you say something that makes my ears perk, you say something that applies directly to me, you educate me in a way that I just haven't heard before. You brought in details that other people have never discussed. No one's ever told me about the $2,000 on my medical payments on my auto and how that actually worked with my health insurance. No one's ever told me the fact that I have $100, $300 on my auto insurance, uninsured motorist, but I have a $500,000 house, so I'm underinsured. No one's ever told me that, you know, when we're talking about building your business, you have to have all of these different levels of social networking, of making sure that our web pages have certain elements on them. No one's ever told me that. They just said, make a web page. No one ever said you need these six things to make that web page even more effective. That's how we want to educate our people. And that's what Proverbs 18 and 15 means when it says, an intelligent heart acquires knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeks knowledge. So let's look at the three parts of education. There's information, knowledge, and wisdom. Information is data that we acquire or become familiar with. So when we see something on the internet, or we read a newspaper, or read a book, or do whatever, that's information. We're acquiring information. Knowledge is how we apply the information that we acquire. So if I'm looking on YouTube and I see a video, and then I use that video to actually go out and fix my car or cut my grass or put up a door or do something like that, the video was information. But I took that information and I applied it, which now I have knowledge. Oh, now I know how to put up a door. Now I know how to cut my yard a certain way or grow a certain vegetable. And then there's wisdom. Wisdom is when we share our knowledge with others and they use it to make their life better. So wisdom is, hey, I know how to put up this door. Let me come show you. Let me come teach you. Let me share my wisdom with you. So to keep it simple, information is what we acquire. Knowledge is how we use it. Wisdom is how we pass it on. And we have to be really careful in business, because our mind looks for a way to justify whatever comes out of our mouth. So if we say something stupid out of our mouth, our mind is going to try to figure out a way to justify that. So now the knowledge that we're supposedly passing on, we're not. Okay, we're not even passing on good information. I've got friends that I don't trust anything they say. Nothing. If they tell me that it's dark outside, I have to look through the window, because they have passed on so much crap to me over the time that I've known them without verifying, without double checking, that I just don't trust anything they say. And you don't want to be that person. You can't educate someone when they don't trust what you say. And so that's why you have to be really careful of what comes out of your mouth when you're trying to teach other people. So don't say things that make you look uneducated. Don't say things that you truly don't know. Professional education or professional vocabulary is the one thing that you can't cover up. You can't hide professional vocabulary. And the reason why is People are too smart. They have too much access to information. You say something dumb, they're going to walk right out on the internet and go, oh, they didn't know what they were talking about. So you better make sure you're educating yourself before you just start saying something random off the wall. Okay, you just can't do it. And when you do say something random and you haven't verified it and you haven't really checked it and you don't understand it, it just makes you look dumb and confused. And it causes you to lose all credibility. And you don't want to do that. So how do we make money, business owners, when we talk about education? Well, here's the thing. People buy information. So if you're taking notes, which hopefully you guys are all taking notes, write this down. People buy information, B-U-I. They buy information. They borrow knowledge. And they rent wisdom. So let's put this in a business component. Buy information. So they may buy something that you sell. Maybe it's a pair of shoes, or they may do this. And so it's a one-time purchase. Or maybe you've got a book or something, and they buy that book one time. So they'll buy your information. They'll borrow your knowledge, which means they'll pick your brain, they'll ask questions. And this is why, guys, as business owners, you have to be really careful. You can't make yourself so convenient and so accessible that the people don't give you value for your knowledge. Because people try to borrow knowledge. Hey, man, can you explain to me how this works? Or can you explain to me how that works? Or never offer you a penny for your time. Hey, I'm going to call you and I'm just going to pick your brain. Well, no, that's not going to happen. You know, if you're going to call me, we may talk for about 10 or 15 minutes, but I'm not going to give you 2 hours to pick my brain and then you not spend a penny in my business. So we have to be careful of that. We have to know our value, the value of our information and the value of our knowledge. Because people buy information, they borrow knowledge, but they rent wisdom. And that means that you have such a volume of knowledge and such a volume of wisdom. And they know that there's no way they can get to all of it, but they don't mind renting it from you. They don't mind paying multiple times to have access to you, to have access to your information, to have access to the library of wealth that you bring to the table. So think about your own business. Are you one of those businesses where people just do a one-time purchase? They just buy whatever little information you're putting out, and then you feel like, I'm going broke because people are just, they're buying a T-shirt, and that's the end of it. Or are you giving away your knowledge? And that's why if you guys ever try to schedule time with me, you only get 15 minutes. And it's not because I'm arrogant. It's because I understand the value of my knowledge, the volume of knowledge and wisdom that I possess. And you just can't come borrow my knowledge all the time without offering me something of value. And it's the same thing with your wisdom. If you are truly good at what you do, you're going to get referrals. You're going to get a lot of repeat business. You're going to get all those wonderful things. If you make your customers apathetic to the point that they're not even thinking about leaving you ever, those are the same customers that will tell their friend, man, you need to use my boy. You need to use my girl. So they're so good. They're so awesome. I have no issues with them. They're great. They're magnificent. They're wonderful because, man, they just take care of me. I didn't even know I had this problem until they broke it down for me. So think about your own business. If your business sales are suffering, are you, one, just selling a one-shot kind of deal? Two, are people picking your brain and asking you so many questions and you're so busy trying to be convenient for everybody that you're the only one going broke? Or are people renting your wisdom? Now, if you expect people to rent your wisdom, you better have a hell of a lot of wisdom to rent. You better know your stuff inside out. You better make sure that whatever resources that you have are there. You know, you guys know I run a video and document library as part of our mentoring membership. And there are thousands and thousands of job aids and documents and videos. And every 2 or 3 weeks, I try to go in and add 4 or 5 new videos or new training aids or new whatever, because I want it to be such a volume of knowledge and a volume of wisdom that people will say, you know what, whatever time I'm with them was worth it. Whether I was with them for a month or with them for a year, it was worth it because I knew that there was no way I would get all this information in one sitting and one, let me pick your brain one time. Okay? So Passing on wisdom is what makes others consider you an expert, not passing on knowledge. It's passing on wisdom. Remember what passing on wisdom is. Wisdom is when you share your knowledge with others and they get to apply it and it makes their life better. So passing on wisdom is what makes others consider you an expert, and it allows you to charge more for your knowledge. That's why specialists, doctors that are specialists, make more than doctors that are generalists. Because generalists pass on knowledge. Specialists pass on wisdom. And so sometimes we're so busy trying to be so general in our business that we actually are hurting our business. And that's why I tell every business, you need a niche. You need to have a niche that you can identify with and that you're known as the expert. Oh, this is the flower lady, or this is the shoe guy, or this is, oh, yeah, that's the teenage driver agent, or that's the whatever. You need a niche, just like in insurance. What do? I sell auto and home insurance. Well, so does every other Tom, Dick, and Harry up and down the road. There's nothing special about you, so of course I'm going to pay less, because at the end of the day, you look just like and act just like the person down the street. So why would I pay more for you? Whereas when that person knows that you're an expert or you're a specialist at something, now they're willing to pay a little bit more. Yeah, my guy's a little bit more expensive. My girl's a little bit more expensive, but it's okay because I know what I'm getting. I know the value of the wisdom that they're passing on to me. Because of the information overload that's in the world, people usually don't have the time or desire to sort through a vast amount of information, okay, in order to make an informed decision. And this is another mistake that people make. Now, I'm going to go back to my video library on this one. In the video library, yes, I have thousands and thousands and thousands of job aids and documents and scripts and videos and all this stuff. But we also do our one-on-one monthly meeting. And the reason we do the one-on-one monthly meeting is so I can direct them into the path that they need. They don't need all 1,000 of those things. They only need two. But sometimes I need to get rid of all the clutter and go, look, this is what you need right now. And for the next 30 days, this is what I want you to focus on. But I like this, and I like this, and I blah, blah, get rid of all that. I need you to just focus on this. And again, because of the information overload that we live in the world, people have access to everything. They usually don't have the time or the desire to sort through the vast amount of information necessary to make an informed decision. So who do they rely on? They rely on the expertise of others. They rely on your wisdom, not just your knowledge, not the fact that you know what a policy does or you know what a shoe is, but, hey, you don't want that shoe. Didn't you tell me you were getting ready to go out to two weeks? You're going to be out and you're going to go out on a party every night and you're going to do this. You don't want this shoe. This is not the shoe that you want to walk in every day. This is going to be better for you. That's how you really set yourself apart. Generally, the more specific your education in an arena, the more money you're going to make in that arena as long as you pass on your wisdom and not just knowledge or information. So guys, why am I telling you this? Because I don't care what you do, even in the insurance world, which is pretty much as generic as you can get. I tell folks, be known for something. Be known as the guy or girl that works with the schools, you know, that works with the teenage drivers, that works with seniors that are in the senior community. Doesn't mean that's all you have to do, but if you're known for one thing, people will trust you for multiple things. So it's the same way here, okay? We're talking about education. Don't just become a generalist. Become a specialist in something, and then the other people will accept you in a general manner. So you'll be fine. So let's talk about the four, there are four ways that you need to practice your education, okay? Daily, this is daily. Daily, you need spiritual education. So you need to take a few moments to spend time in God's Word. Daily, you need personal education. So you should try to improve yourself personally, whether that's reading a book, whether that's just assessing your weaknesses and strengths and saying, okay, I need to be better at this. You know, I need to be better at managing money. I need to be able better to manage this better, however you look at that. But you need to do something personally every single day. And that's why we tell you take 30 minutes in the morning. Maybe you dedicate 10 minutes to prayer and 10 minutes to personal, you know, let me think about me a little bit, and then let me think about my business for the next 10 minutes, however you decide to divide it up. But you definitely need that. You need to do something professionally. You should try to learn something new every day about your profession, every day. Whether it's picking up something and just reading it, whether it's clicking on something on the internet and just kind of go through it and see what's there, or whether it's reading a blog. I know I love to go out on LinkedIn and I'll read some of those things that are out on LinkedIn, some of those groups, because some of those people share some amazing information. I go, wow, I didn't even know that. I had no clue that was how that worked. So I love to go out on LinkedIn and do that. But every day you need to do something professional. And here's the fourth thing. You need to do something technological. You need to increase your technology use, your technology awareness every single day. Take a few minutes each day to learn more details about the technology that you're already using, or try to learn something about a new technology. Here's what's a crazy statistic, okay? And it's been verified like over the last 10 years. Most people only use 25% or less of the functionality of technology that they use every day to operate their business. So if you use Outlook, there's so many buttons on Outlook that could make your life so much easier, but we never take the time to learn them. We learn the two or three that we use. We fall into that habit relationship with our technology. So I have a habit of clicking these three buttons, so these are the three buttons I'm going to use. I don't even know what this does. Mail merge? What's mail merge for? What? What do you mean there's a developer tab and I can actually do a drop down? What? What is that? Where'd that come from? It comes from us not taking a few moments and just saying, what else does my tool do? How else can my tool be used? And so what I always tell folks whenever I'm mentoring them is, think about what you need to do to make your business profitable. What do you need to do to make money in your business? What are your revenue-producing tasks? And then see if there's a button or a tab that allows you to do it easier. So let me give you an example of Outlook. I was working with an agent the other day, 25-year agent, insurance agent. So we're working in their Outlook, and I noticed that his staff person, every time they got ready to send an email, they typed it up. Every single time, da da da, or they'd go out on a Word document that they typed up stuff and they copy and paste it and then change the name and do all that stuff. I'm like, why are you doing that? That seems so cumbersome. Why don't you just use the auto signatures inside of Outlook? What do you mean the auto signatures inside of Outlook? So I went into their Outlook, pulled up the automatic signatures, which have unlimited character use, and we took all those templates and we put them inside of Outlook. And with one click of a button, they could automatically drop down and fill in an email. Then they just put the person's name in. So we're talking a 25-year insurance agent that has had Outlook for 25 years that never knew that, because they never took the time to click a button or think, what do I need to make my job a little easier or a little bit more efficient? So it's the same thing here, guys. Every day, we need to practice four types of education, excuse me, spiritual, personal, professional, and technology. And every day you need to try to learn something new about the technology you already use. You guys know I have the Data and Marketing Super Center, which is like the best CRM in the world. But I probably tell 80% of the people that come to me and say, oh, I want to use your Data Super Center. I say, no, what? Do you know how to do this in your system? Do you know how to do this? Do you know how to do that? Do you know how to do that? No. Then you don't need my system. My system's just going to be something else that you don't know how to use. So why don't we max out the usage of your system first, or determine that your system can't do the things that you want it to do before we go spend new money? See, that's what wisdom does. Wisdom says, yes, I could sell you something, and then you'll sit there and get frustrated with it, and then you're angry at me because I didn't explain it to you. Now you're not using my system or your system. Or I can say, you know what? Wisdom says you don't know how to use your own system. So why don't we use your system first? Let's see if it'll do what you need it to do, or if it won't, let's verify that it won't before we even think about new money. oh, man, you're wise. No, I just have some real-world practical use on this. So how do we make sure that we do those four things when it comes to education every day? Number one is read. You need to read something every day about your profession. Read something, especially read something that the general public has access to. If your prospect comes in and they know more about your product than you do, that's a problem. So you need to read something that the general public has access to. I always tell you, go read your competitors. So whoever your competitor is, go out and read their website, because they're trying to make sure that they're putting out more information than you are. So read their site. Next, you want to role play. Guys, I can't tell you, especially in the insurance industry, but in every industry, you should role play, because that's the only way your people are ever going to say what you want them to say when the situation requires it, is role play on a regular basis. So role play often to educate and prepare yourself for the various situations and conversations that you're going to encounter in your business. Okay. You also want to make sure you talk to your mentors, your money makers, and your energy makers. These are the people that will keep you mentally on top of your game. And if you don't have a board of directors, shame on you. You need one. Or board of advisors if you're a really small company. But you need a board of advisors, because those are folks that you want to talk to. Those are part of your money makers and hopefully part of your energy makers. But you need to talk to your mentors, money makers, and energy makers on a regular basis. Okay, not just every now and then, but on a regular basis. So we're gonna finish with this. I'm the only speaker tonight, so we'll get out of here a little bit early. I'm gonna look at the importance of a five-day role play. Why we should role play one conversation at least five times. Until we have role played a conversation at least five times, I shouldn't expect to know it, and I shouldn't expect my people to know it. And here's why. The very first time you role play a situation or conversation, all it is an introduction. This is when you're first introduced to the new process or the conversation. You explain the benefits of the process or the conversation, but you really don't understand it. Okay, you just kind of got an overview. The second time you role play, it's an orientation. So on the second role play, you start to understand more details and specifics about the overall conversation or the overall process. Think about like it was in college. You got your brochure. You got all your stuff. You went on your campus visit. Life was all good. You said, yes, I'm going, you know, for me, I'm going to USC. This is where I'm going. This is my school. Well, I had an introduction to the school. But then when I got to the campus, I had a week-long orientation, because they needed me to understand the details and specifics about the overall school. And then the third time you role play something, it's gaining familiarity. This is when you start to look at the individual pieces of the process or role play instead of just looking at the process as a whole. You start to emotionally lock into the parts of the process or the conversation that you believe are important. So going back to my university analogy. So I get to USC. I get my orientation, my week-long orientation, and then I start to gain familiarity. Oh, this is the chow hall. This is where I go to eat. Okay, this is the library. All right, oh, I don't have to walk all the way around. I can cut through and get there. I start to gain a familiarity with it, just like your people are gaining familiarity with your conversation. And then after a while, I start to develop the fourth role play, or the fourth day you actually practice something, you develop a relationship. So now I know to go from point A to point B on campus, because this is where my classes are. I'm going to go to class over here, and then I'm going to come back over here and go to this class. So now I actually start to develop a relationship. Instead of hanging out in the commons, I'm actually hanging out in this area, because I now have a relationship with this building. Your people are the same way with your conversations. They start to develop a relationship with the conversation or the process the fourth time that they've been trained on it. And then the fifth time, it's called building on top of the process or conversation. What happens? This is when they start to allow their natural personality or their natural conversation, because they finally understand the parts and the nuances. But you got to be careful. This is also when they start to take shortcuts and decide to leave out certain parts of the process. This is why you have accountability. So if I'm teaching you this and I'm expecting you to do all of this, I'm going to come in and spot check you. I'm going to give you some accountability pieces to make sure that you didn't get to this part where you feel like I know it so well that I don't have to do it. Okay, or I can leave this off, or I can cut this out, or I don't have to say this, because those are very important pieces that they're cutting out. They're cutting out things based on their ego, their arrogance, their emotions, their expectations, their history, their fears, their insecurities. I don't have to say this. I hate asking people this, so therefore I'm not going to say this part, even though that's a very, very important part. So let me give you an example in insurance. Whenever there's a claim in any of our partner insurance agencies, we automatically generate a life insurance quote, automatically. Okay, if you're under 55 and you're not in the hospital or about to die, we're going to send a life insurance quote to you. Well, for whatever reason, I have people who go, well, I don't want to send a life insurance quote. That just seems like it's intrusive. It seems like, you know, we're just selling them at a very important part of what's going on in their life, and I don't want to do that. And so I have to make it accountable. Look, it's not something that I expect you to have a feeling or emotion about. I just expect it to be done, because what they don't understand is the very first time someone dies under their watch, and that spouse can come in and go, you got our home, you got our auto, you got our boat, motorcycle, but you never talk to us about life insurance? Why not? Because my staff person didn't feel comfortable talking to you about it. See, that's what we don't want. We don't ever want that to happen. So we make it accountable. It's a checklist. I'm going to come in. I want to spot check you. I see that you handled 4 claims last week. Where's the life insurance quote to go with that? When was it mailed out? Because that's part of spot checking. Okay? That's how it works. All right, guys. So that's it for education for me tonight. I will leave you with these thoughts, and then I'm going to open it up for a couple of questions. I'll leave it with these thoughts. Number one, surround yourself with people that are smarter than you are. Okay? I cannot tell you how important that is. Surround yourself with people that are smarter than you are about making money. If you're the smartest person in the room, then that means that's not the room for you. You need to go find a room where you're not the smartest person, because in that room, you've pretty much maxed out all the money you can make. But you go to another room, now you got room to grow. You need to set aside specific time each week to improve your professional education. As soon as you learn something new that has value, you need to teach it to someone else. You need to build that superhighway, the 4 or 5 different ways that you learn something that makes that superhighway. So you need to teach it to someone else, okay? Always. Always listen to your competitors. Always listen to your competitors. Read what they're putting out. Watch what they're saying, because they are trying to make themselves better than you. So always know what they're saying. And share your expertise with as many groups and organizations as you can, because that's just going to help spread your business, okay? And finally, don't be ashamed to charge what your expertise is worth. Never be ashamed to charge what your expertise is worth, especially new business owners. You feel like, well, I just need to get more business, so I'm just going to charge $20 where everyone else is charging $100. Well, guess what? You won't get business, because if I feel like that what you're giving me is $100, has $100 value, and you're charging $20, you don't have any value. Okay? You don't have any value. So a lot of times we don't get business because we're undercharging, not because we're overcharging. So at least charge what your competitors are charging. If you want to charge a little bit less, that's fine. But at least charge something in the ballpark of what your competitors are charging, so that you're not devalued because you're afraid to actually charge what you're worth. Okay? All right, so I'm going to unmute a couple of folks here and have a conversation with them. I recognize this number, so let me go here. Hey, Carla, are you there? Can you talk to me? Carla? Miss Abonia, can you talk to me? Nope. Okay.
Hello, I'm here. I'm sorry. Oh. My phone was muted. I was trying to get to the unmute button.
Yes, star 6. No problem. Okay, Carla, so tell me what you picked up tonight, one or two things that you picked up tonight.
Oh, wow, so many amazing things. Thank you, Billy. First off, the importance of staying connected with your clients and just learning any means necessary that you can always keep in contact with the things that they need, do important reviews with them, make sure that you're sharing important knowledge and information with them, and using automation, technology, or outsourcing if you don't have the time to do it. Because if you don't do it, someone else is going to do it. So that's a big part of success in your business. So that's one of the big keys. And also, I love how you said that knowledge is pretty much borrowed and wisdom rented. So that was pretty powerful. And the power in the knowledge is implementing it and putting it into use and using it to grow your business, using it to help other people succeed. That is the power of the wisdom and the knowledge. It's not just to acquire space in your brain, but to utilize it and spread it. That's where the power is.
That's become an expert. Become an expert. And that people only know you're an expert if you actually show them your expertise.
Yes, I agree. Exactly.
Excellent. Anything from the relationship part?
The importance of having people that are energy makers, energy savers around you, and taking away the energy takers, make sure to keep them at a limited time in your schedule. So these people just help to propel you forward when you're able to have more of these people in your lives. And also what you said before, the money makers and money savers, and also limiting time with the money takers. So the importance of building those type of relationships and having people that can propel you upward. You know, so you don't want to be the smartest person in the room. You want people that are higher level than you, because that's going to bring you up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like I said, if you're the smartest person in the room, you need to find a different room.
Yeah.
So,
that's a great way to put it.
So thank you, Carl. I appreciate you being here tonight.
Oh, thank you, Billy. Thank you for an awesome session, like always.
Thank you, ma'am. Okay. All right. Let's go to someone else here. I'm going to unmute. Okay. This number is, it's 972 is the start, and the last four are 3252. So the first two are 972 and the last four are 3252. Excuse me, first three are 972 and the last four are 3252. Who am I speaking with?
This is Al Brunson.
Hey, Mr. Brunson, how are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm doing a whole lot better after your discussion this evening.
Thank you, Al.
I'm certainly one that has been given an opportunity to take my company to level 2.0.
Okay.
But that was after making a number of mistakes that you have highlighted. And even though I was unable to take notes because I'm multitasking right now and I did not want to miss this opportunity to listen in, the things that the young lady discussed previously, and certainly if you're the smartest person in the room, get out of the room and go find another room.
Yes, sir.
And I've used that today that has helped me, and I'm not in insurance, and some proposal writing that hopefully will extend my company from being national to international.
So, what do you do? What do you do, Al?
I have a construction management and program management firm.
Okay.
I do more transit related work with light rail programs, transit oriented development around stations, and we manage station development for a number of authorities across the country. Or we have. We're currently working on one, doing a 26-mile commuter line to DFW Airport from Fort Worth with about seven stations along that alignment. So yeah, we managed that.
Very familiar with that project. We just voted on that. Okay. You know, I live in Mansfield.
That is correct. That is correct. So I just really appreciate, and I guess the people that are on the phone listening have taken the same approach that I have taken, and that is to stop. When you find yourself in a hole and digging, stop digging, you know, and get out of the hole. And I've had to, God has given me an opportunity, I say again, to do this better this time and to listen to him. And so that is what I am attempting to incorporate in my day-to-day business development aspects, as well as how I interface and interact with my personnel, and most of the time I work on these projects that have these very integrated teams that have a lot of consultants, and we have to meld all our knowledge and capabilities in order to manage budgets and schedules.
Next. But you know what's so funny, and having worked on multiple projects, is, man, when you have good Bible-based principles and high character, isn't it crazy how you seem to become the lead all the time?
It is, and I tell my people that all the time. I tell them to just observe and listen and be scriptural. I'm back and forth. There are certain books of the Bible, but you went to Psalms and Proverbs over the last couple of weeks. You know, I'm routinely into those particular books of the Bible, especially Proverbs, because wisdom
Proverbs.
Is so important.
You know how Grandma you say, "Ooh, that's my song. That's how I am about Proverbs. That's my book.
That's the book."
Yes, sir.
So I don't want to take up all the time, but I just appreciate you taking the time and realizing that there is a need for someone such as yourself out here, that will take a stand and be Bible focused and Bible specific, and this becomes not complicated; it simplifies.
It does.
This aspect of running a business and interfacing with people and being successful, it simplifies it. So
you said that so eloquently, and I say that all the time. People are like, "Billy, how do you do this?" You know, I think I have 57 agencies or whatever that fall within our group. We're about $600 million plus in management, assets under management. And people go, "Oh, my God, you must work 24/7. I'm like, "I work about 8 hours a week."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're like, "How do you do that?" I said, "Because God laid it all out for me. It's there. I just got to listen. I just got to remove my own arrogance and my own ego and my own expectations and my own lack of self-discipline. I just got to get me out the way. Once I get me out the way and put him at the head, it's easy."
That is it.
And I'm learning that more and more every day. I got to get me out the way. He ordained an entire book. You know what I'm saying? An entire book to teach me how to run a successful business.
That's just
got to get off my own ego and arrogance and actually do what it says.
I'm there. I am there, my man. I thank you.
And congratulations on your company and the growth of it.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. One last question. How did you hear about this conference call?
I actually came and heard you speak at the Veterans Conference a couple weeks back.
In Dallas,
Downtown Library in Dallas.
Yes, sir. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, excellent. Thank you so much. I'm honored that you're here. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. All right. I'm going to open one more, and then we're going to let you guys get out of here. Let's go with this one. All right. 773, and the last four are 7566. 773, and the last four are 7566. Who am I speaking with?
You're speaking to Pam Crenshaw.
Hey, Pam Crenshaw. How are you doing?
I am doing great, Billy. How are you doing?
I'm so blessed and highly favored. It's crazy. So I have no complaints. No complaints
whatsoever.
Well,
I have a page full of notes today.
So give me a couple of those notes then. Tell me what you took away, what you personally took away.
Well, what I personally took away about good relationships and successful relationships, and identifying the two different type of customers, that the lazy ones and then the ones that are
apathetic.
Yes.
Okay.
So the two, and that was very important. And then let's see.
Now you got to go deeper with me. How? Because I still got a few minutes here. How is that important in your business for what you do? Because you're a consultant, so how is that important in your business?
Well, for me, we deal with our clients' customers as well, and so being able to identify those type of people for their company as well, not just ours, but because we do so much work for our clients' customers, all of this knowledge is great because I kind of teach the client as well about their customers. So that's why that's important. Because, you know, mainly all of my customers are clients, but, you know, like I said, we're dealing with their customers. And then also becoming an expert, the wisdom, and, you know, that was really powerful. You said people buy information, they borrow knowledge, and they rent wisdom. And so I got to sit with that a little bit because I'm constantly typing and I'm like, oh, that's good. So I have to go back and just really think about that and, you know, and how I'm going to implement that into my life. So that was really good. And the four types of discipline, I'm already doing that in my life. And then the role play, that was very powerful. Because we're in the process of rebuilding, it's like a reset button, that's where I'm at, of rebuilding the business. And I look back at parts where, you know, I wasn't so good and I failed. And this is very important, the role play. And I've heard you say it before, but it's the difference of hearing and putting it into action. And that's where I'm at now, putting everything I learned into action. And so this role playing is going to be so great moving forward in my business.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you so much. I'm so honored that you would be here tonight. So,
okay. Well, thank you. I'm honored that you took the time to do this.
Well, you know, this is as much for me as it is for anybody else. I'm reminding myself of a lot of the things that I've done wrong, too. So, like I said, it's as much for me, but the best way to learn something is to teach it. So.
Well, that's why I'm here every week, taking notes, writing, listening to the recordings over and over again, because I'm determined to live a godly, successful, have a godly, successful business, and it is based off of God's word. So that's where I'm at.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Okay. We will talk to you next week then. So let me go ahead and get you here. Okay. All right, guys, we're going to let you get out here a little early tonight, 10 minutes early, but I absolutely appreciate you guys being here. Thank you so much. And the recording will be available tomorrow morning. I'll also put the handout. I'll try to get the handout tonight. Like I said, I changed some things on my presentation that didn't match up with the handout, and I don't want to confuse anybody. So I'm going to change the handout, and I'll get that out to you as well. Next week is our final week. We have three powerful speakers next week, okay? Powerful. That was, next week is our ladies' week, okay? Carla, who you heard tonight, that I unmuted tonight, she's one of the speakers for next week on the mentorship and on the asking questions part. And then we have Pastor Donna Boyd out of Virginia. Carla's out of New York. Pastor Donna Boyd, that's out of Virginia, and she's going to talk about that as well. And then we have another young lady, Miss Ellerby, Kiona Ellerby, and she's going to be here next week with us. She's out of Atlanta. So it's Women's Power Night next Friday, or excuse me, next Monday. But I absolutely appreciate all you guys being here. And for the hundreds and hundreds of folks that are online, you know what, at the end of the day, I'm just trying to do what God put in my heart to do, and hopefully it's going to make an impact in your life and in your business. Okay? So we will talk to you guys next Monday. Thank you so much, and you guys have a great day.